Welcome to the College Admissions Process Podcast presented by Prep Expert. Prep Expert offers live online SAT and ACT courses with the best score guarantees, instructors, and curriculum. Go to prepexpert.com to guarantee your child's success. What's up, podcast friends, and thank you for listening to the College Admissions Process Podcast. While analyzing the podcast data, I realized that many of the earlier episodes, some of which received the most overall downloads and are still extremely relevant today, are not being listened to as much as the newly released episodes. This is why I created the alphabetical list of colleges available on the podcast with the link to the related interview to the right of each school. Please use the alphabetical list as part of your college search, which can be found in the show notes and on my website, www.collegeadmissionstalk.com. The alphabetical list serves as an on-demand virtual college fair with schools from throughout the country. To highlight how valuable the alphabetical list is, I will release past episodes that receive the highest overall downloads on Wednesdays throughout the summer. Please share the alphabetical list with anyone you think that may benefit, as it has proven to be such a valuable tool for so many listeners. So are you ready? Let's talk about it. Welcome to the CAP, the College Admissions Process Podcast. I am your host, John Durante, and it gives me great pleasure to introduce to you today Bruce Bunnick, who's the Director of Admissions at Lehigh University. Now, Bruce and I met at the NACAC conference in Baltimore. I guess we hit it off, Bruce, and here we are. Welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm very well, John. Thank you. And it's a pleasure to join you for this podcast. So thanks for this opportunity.
Well, thank you so much, Bruce. As you know, it's truly my honor and pleasure, as I know that this conversation is going to help so many students and their parents. So Bruce, let's get right to it. Lehigh University is known for its strong academic programs, obviously. And my understanding is that there's over 100 with popular programs in mechanical engineering, finance, computer science, just to name a few. Could you highlight some of its distinctive academic offerings and any unique opportunities that set Lehigh apart from other institutions?
Certainly. There are three programs of note, all of which are designated as honors programs. They're also integrated, which means that they cross the boundaries of at least two separate colleges on our campus. They are the Integrated Business and Engineering Degree Program that combines engineering with business, the Integrated Degree in Engineering Arts and Sciences, which combines elements of the College of Arts and Sciences with engineering, and then finally, the computer science and business program that obviously combines applications of computer science and business. The interesting aspect of the computer science and business program is that it carries joint accreditation. It is a fully business accredited degree, and it is a fully computer science accredited degree that students earn. All three of those programs are four-year experiences. We do offer, for students who wish to pursue it, an optional fifth year if they want to stay on and maybe earn a master's degree. Some of them might want to stay on and earn an undergrad degree, a second undergraduate degree in a particular discipline. They might want to study the Integrated Business and Engineering degree program, but then earn a BS in civil engineering in a fifth year. Completely optional, but these are programs that I think are a bit distinctive. Each of them are honors designated programs. The other piece that I would also want to emphasize that Lehigh writ large, with approximately 100 different majors to choose from, the university has a very, very deep commitment to integrated learning. So students who study in one college are free to choose to study as a minor in a separate college. And we have often many unusual combinations. The student who might study chemical engineering and minor in music performance, the social science major who might major in psychology and minor in business, the business major that might minor in foreign language. So in essence, we do give our undergraduates access to all four undergraduate colleges at the university, and we provide a lot of support and academic advising to them to help them navigate their curricula.
Well, we appreciate that overview, and you emphasize the integrated nature of your program, which crosses the boundaries between at least two. You gave multiple examples, one of them being business and engineering. You talked about your 50-year program as well, in case someone wants to stay on and finish that master's with an additional year, which is terrific. Truly sounds like there's something for everyone, Bruce. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people, they're very curious. They want to know about life outside of your classroom. So what types of extracurricular activities and campus life experience can students look forward to at Lehigh University?
I think the students that we attract have a very intentional commitment to their academic studies, but this is the type of an environment that is deeply residential at the same time. So there is an unwritten expectation that our campus community places on experiences away from the classroom. Certainly, again, students are purposeful and deliberate when it comes to their studies, and they're very collaborative in nature on the academic side. But to be able to put the books down, figuratively speaking, and engage in the community is something that our undergraduates welcome. They embrace. They're looking specifically for that social element of the campus. We do host just over 200 student-led clubs and organizations. And these clubs and organizations can range from everything from service clubs, social clubs, academic clubs, club sports, recreational sports, and so on. So there's literally a shopping mall of availability of clubs and organizations. And if a student were to come to Lehigh and engage in our social environment, the clubs and organizations, but decide, I want to start my own club, I want to start something that has significance to me, etc., we are welcoming that opportunity to students. We have specific guidelines. We'll walk them through the process to create that club, to apply to Student Senate for funding and official recognition. So just over 200 presently in terms of the clubs and organizations, lots to choose from. On the other side, athletically, we are Division I. We do field 24 NCAA Division I sporting events for men and women. We are a Patriot League school, so I consider Lehigh to be a Division I mid-major athletically, where we are competing on the level of our conferences made up of institutions such as Bucknell and Lafayette, Colgate, Holy Cross, the service academies, Army and Navy, American University in Washington, D.C., Loyola of Maryland and Boston University. So that's our level of competition. We have Division I athletes, but we also have students that say, again, that I want to be involved. Greek life is also available, John, on our campus. We have 14 fraternities and sororities on the campus. So there are a number of different opportunities for Greek organizations and students who might want to get involved in that aspect. Greek life is a segment of the social existence at Lehigh. It is not the sum total. So for many of our students, they'll say it is an aspect of my overall social existence as opposed to strictly the end-all be-all of the experience.
Understood. And clearly, students at Lehigh University are focused on their academics. But as you explained, you have over 200 clubs to keep students engaged and active outside of the classroom, which of course includes, as you mentioned, all of the clubs, D1 athletics, and even Greek life. Bruce, many students and their parents are curious about your holistic approach to the review process. Could you explain how Lehigh evaluates each component of an application, including things, of course, such as academic records, extracurriculars, and recommendation letters?
Certainly. And I think the operative word in the question is holistic. That is important to us. This is a decidedly humanistic process the task of reading applications every year. They are read by people. Each member of the admission staff is assigned to a particular geographic region of the country or the world. And we are, in effect, territory managers for each of those territories. I, for example, recruit specifically in the borough of Manhattan in New York City, and I am charged in that capacity to know the schools. They could be public magnet high schools, charter high schools, independent high schools, but we really are very deliberate as far as understanding the grading system, the grading trends, the type of student from those high school that might find Lehigh appealing, et cetera. So we're very humanistic about this process. The evaluation, however, it takes some time. We are forecasting between 20 to 21,000 applications this year. The admission staff, again, intentionally sequesters itself for about 3 months or so that we can focus on applications. There's not necessarily a given protocol. That is, when we open an application, we're going to this section or that section, et cetera. We are doing a comprehensive assessment of each application where we take into account, of course, the academic markers. The high school transcript to us is very important. We want to make sure that students have prepared themselves from their high school curriculum. So we don't tinker with GPAs. We don't recalculate. We don't norm for grade point averages. We use the grading system that is established in that high school. We'll also look at different things such as leadership capacity, experiences, extracurricular activities. Those kinds of things are very important because, yes, we want students who are going to be very, again, purposeful in the classroom, but we also want to understand what it is that's important to them. The written essays are very important. It's the one aspect of applications, in my opinion, that gives voice to an otherwise voiceless application. Recommendation letters are also important because they speak about the student. Counselors who tend to talk about the student from a personal perspective and their thoughts on the student's success, level of success in the college, teachers that talk about their contributions to the classroom. So it is comprehensive. There's not one piece that outweighs the other. We are test optional as well. So we might get testing from some students, we might not.
Well, that's terrific. Thank you so much for the overview. You talked about the transcript. You talk about a student's potential leadership capacity. And the fact that you're purposeful in terms of who's going to succeed in your classroom, but you also want to know the type of student that they will be on your campus in terms of the type of citizen that they're going to be, if you will, and how they're going to contribute. So let's unpackage the overall applications a little bit further, Bruce, if you don't mind. Mm-hmm. Essays, as you mentioned, play a significant role in the overall application process. So what advice can you give to applicants on crafting standout essays that genuinely reflect their personality and aspirations?
I think the essay is an aspect of a college application that many high school seniors sometimes lament, right? That they might go through several drafts of an essay. They might try to write the unicorn essay, the perfect essay. But these are, you know, frankly and honestly, they're 17 and 18-year-old students, and I think that their honesty and their authenticity tends to stand out in their essays. And I think that is what I value, what we value the most at Lehigh. So there is no perfect format. I would say if I can shift a bit to advice as far as how to craft that essay, I would urge students to do their best to stay on prompt. That is, the common application or the coalition application gives a set number of prompts for the long essay. And students are typically asked to respond with up to 650 words. Try not to drift. If you're taking a topic or you're selecting a prompt that has something to do with resiliency or something that you've overcome, et cetera, stay on that topic. Try not to drift or wander in your prose. Maybe sit down and write just kind of sketch out how you want to approach this essay and what are important points that you want to add to it that will emphasize your development, emphasize your growth, emphasize what you've achieved, etc. It's never a bad idea to outline what you plan to write in an essay. Not required, but not a bad idea. That way, you're not going through multiple drafts of that essay that can be tedious at times. We read them, and I will also just add that of the thousands of applications that we read each year, and I've been in this business for over 30 years, so I've read a number of essays over those in that time period. I will remember an applicant because of the essay. Wow. I don't always remember the applicant because of the grade performance or their the number of A's or, you know, when we were requiring the SAT, their SAT scores, et cetera. It's nice to remember them on their leadership or their accomplishments, but it's the essay that really keeps them in my mind. And I have had instances where I've read an application, I've read the essay, and I was so moved by the essay that I've stopped doing what I'm doing. And I literally email the student just to say, I want you to know you crafted such a wonderful, wonderful essay. It was so insightful. It doesn't happen all the time, but I've done that and I continue to practice that when I feel like it's give credit to where credit is due.
Well, that's awesome. And I like how you talked about as a 17-year-old students, your honesty and authenticity really stands out. Make it sound like it's being written from a 17-year-old and stay on prompt. But Bruce, as a quick follow-up, you talked about some inspirational examples. Would you be able to share one with us just to give some insight in terms of what is it that the student wrote about that stuck with you?
I've read a number, and I'll kind of classify that under commitment to family. Students who might have crafted or scripted an essay, I recall one student who really had a significant parental role in their household. Both parents worked. I recall the mother had two jobs to work. And the student had responsibility for three younger siblings. So they were a de facto parent to those children. And the student spoke specifically about how quickly he had to grow up to fulfill these obligations that his parent, he lived in a very loving household, but the circumstances were such that he had to commit his time. And so he also went on to share that my extracurricular profile, my leadership profile, et cetera, might not match a lot of my peers in your applicant pool, but understand that in the world of my younger siblings, I have become everything to them. And it was just really just an impactful example of the way that a student described their life, their lived experiences, but also their deep commitment to the value system that he was raised with.
Well, I appreciate that, and I'm glad I asked the question because it really gives insight to the fact that students, if you have to take care of the family, perhaps you're holding a job yourself, let it be known to the admissions counselors. Had this person not written about that, and perhaps in this case, the student really didn't have a lot of extracurricular activities, you're leaving it up to the admissions counselor to speculate as to why, as opposed to explaining it in an essay, which in this case obviously resonated with Bruce for a long time. So I know that a lot of students are probably connected to this very example, and I appreciate you sharing that with us, Bruce. So let's continue to dig deeper in terms of the holistic approach. Letters of recommendation are another important part of a student's overall application, obviously. So Bruce, what makes a recommendation letter truly impactful, and how should students approach their choice of recommenders?
Certainly. Great questions. I believe that in reading letters of recommendation, it's not the quantity, it's not the length of the letter, it's the quality that is included in those letters of recommendation. This should be something that I think students ought to investigate as they continue their search. But at Lehigh specifically, we don't require, for example, students who have an interest in STEM disciplines to approach a calculus teacher or a physics teacher or a chemistry teacher because they're teaching an area of the curriculum that they might want to study on the college level. If those individuals can write specific letters of recommendation, supportive letters of recommendation on their behalf, by all means, go ahead. But they can go to an English teacher or a history teacher, someone who knows them well, who can vouch for their capacity on the college level, can comment on the accomplishments and the way they've made contributions to that individual class or perhaps classes. And why they stood out. That's the teacher recommendation. So I would say, again, investigate. Some institutions might prefer that you submit a letter of recommendation from a teacher that is in a subject that you plan to study in college. We don't at Lehigh. We just, again, we don't have a preference. The guidance counselor recommendation, on the other hand, it will vary, quite honestly. Counselors tend to talk about you as a student, as a person. They talk about your maturity. They talk about, you know, from the moment they met you to their work with you. I will admit, though, there are some letters of recommendation specifically from guidance counselors where they have either said, this is a very large school district. We only get to know our students at the beginning of their senior year. And I don't know the student as well as I would hope. As well as I'd hope to learn or know them. In those instances, if a student is feeling a little bit of resistance or reluctance, if you will, in that case, I would say submit an additional letter of recommendation from a teacher. You can also submit a letter of recommendation from an employer, a coach. Sometimes we've had letters of recommendation from alumni. I will, though, say, and I think this is advice that I'm going to give on the whole letters of recommendation piece, be cautious. You don't want to submit too many because there are too many. In our operation, we've required two, one from a teacher, one from a guidance counselor. If a student submits an additional letter of recommendation outside of those two, we'll read it. But when it becomes three, four, five, six letters of recommendation, we simply can't devote the time to read all of them. So we very likely we'll have to skip over them. We might refer back to them in committee, but try to keep your letters of recommendation tight within the confines of what the institution's asking. Maybe one more. If you know an alum, those kinds of things, okay, but don't go overboard with letters of recommendation.
Oh, I appreciate that. And Bruce, what I'm gathering from that is, again, what you said, it's not the quantity, but the quality. So if you're going to ask for an additional letter of recommendation, and of course you said you required two, one from the teacher, one from the guidance counselor, if you're going to ask for that additional letter of recommendation, would you agree that it needs to be someone that's going to add something different as opposed to someone who's going to basically repeat what's on your activity sheet or repeat what the other teacher may have written in his or her letter? Any insight on that?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. The you could see two letters of recommendation that are sort of diametrically opposed to one another. That is, someone from a traditional humanities level program that might speak about your ability to grasp historical context and the way they've admired the way that, you know, you could recite things, but you can also offer insight into aspects of in a historical context, for example, as opposed to maybe a more scientific teacher who might discuss your capacity to grasp mathematical concepts or scientific concepts, and you could, you know, you're a curious minded individual. You're always asking questions. You're always being thoughtful, and in a way that demonstrates your intelligence and your true curiosity toward the subject. I've seen that in the past where they are very, very different from one another, and I think it's a good idea if you can do it, but please don't feel as if you have to do it.
This is your host, John Durante, and it gives me great pleasure to welcome back Sean Patel, who's the founder and CEO of Prep Expert. Sean, welcome back.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me. And I'm so excited to announce that Prep Expert is the official title sponsor of the College Admissions Process podcast. This has been a partnership in the works for a while now, and I'm so glad we got it off the ground. We're so excited to work with families, parents, students of the College Admissions Process podcast at Prep Expert to help them through our live online SAT and ACT courses, not only improve their SAT and ACT scores, but help them get into college as well as win hundreds of thousands of dollars in college scholarships. Thank you so much for the partnership, and we are so excited to work with your families.
Thank you, Sean. And to learn more about how Prep Expert can support your child's academic journey, visit prepexpert.com today, and best wishes to all. Well, we appreciate that, and of course, I agree, but it's a good lens to look into students and parents going through the process. Try to be mindful of the fact that there's a lot of pieces to the holistic review when talking about the recommendation letters. Try to call upon someone that's going to give a different aspect of who you are as a person, mm-hmm. as opposed to just two letters from two people that are identical, right? And that yes. doesn't add to the overall application. So, yes. you know, we appreciate that. And, you know, I encourage students to look through that lens when they're thinking about putting it all together. Mm-hmm. The Common App, Bruce, asks the same questions regardless of which school you're applying to.
Yes.
But many schools add supplemental questions to gain more insight into the student. So how many supplemental questions does Lehigh ask for? And what are you trying to learn from potential students in their responses?
We require two additional short responses that are included on the Lehigh writing supplement. I still refer to it as the writing supplement. I think in the Common Act world, I think they call it the member questions these days. We do ask a more open-ended question of that tests a student's investigation of Lehigh, where we ask them what motivated you to apply to Lehigh and share your journey of your investigation. So it is a very pointed Lehigh question. And we receive a variety of answers. That particular question has a response that's up to 150 words. So not lengthy. So again, just an assessment of their investigation. The other question, internally, we refer to it as the Lehigh community question. And we've tinkered with the wording of this question from year to year. We ask them a question about their lived experiences. We give them three separate, we have this sort of preamble where we discuss life on Lehigh's campus, the things that we value, the mission of the institution, et cetera. So we give students some context of this is what we believe in at Lehigh. Here are three separate prompts that will ask you to sort of discuss in detail your lived experience, something you've overcome, or something that is important to you. So we will ask them for up to 300 words on just one, only one of those prompts. And that is something that we value because we're trying as best as we can to have the applicant temporarily put themselves in the mindset of a Lehigh student. This is what I've overcome, and this is why I feel that it will contribute to my growth and development and to the overall campus community at Lehigh. So they're the ones that we feel that there's no right or wrong response, and that students usually, again, just to get back to that whole idea of authenticity, they're really, I think they probe a little bit deeper. They sort of talk about themselves as an individual and what they've accomplished, but also maybe something they've overcome. Okay, so very important to us. I will mention, though, quickly, John, we have this, what I consider to be an optional question, but on the application itself, we ask students why they're applying to a particular academic program. So we're not asking for a long response, but we're curious to know what is on their mind and what led them to consider applying to an engineering discipline or to a business discipline or something in arts and sciences. That is sort of a free form question that students have the option to respond to. It'll give them a chance to help us understand why they want to study computer science, why they want to study finance, and so on. So I'd look at that less as of an essay and more of a just a response prompt to more of an academic response prompt.
Well, I appreciate how you talked about the two short responses. The first looks at your Lehigh motivation. The second, you talked about the Lehigh community. You mentioned the optional question, why a particular major? All of that, to me, Bruce, sounds like you're trying to understand the demonstrated understanding, right? If the student really understands what Lehigh has to offer, they need to explain why they see themselves there, like you mentioned, a particular program, mm-hmm. and frankly, how they see themselves contributing, right, to this thing that we call Lehigh that's obviously bigger than all of us, but how lovely if yes. a student could come there and also contribute.
Yes.
Is that correct? Would you agree with that in terms of that's really the essence of what you're trying to determine there, their demonstrated understanding of all your programs? What do you think?
I agree with you, and I think that is sort of the burning question that most colleges ask students, right? Why is it that what led you to find us and what motivated you to submit an application So there is no right or wrong answer,
right,
or response. And I think that's worth stressing. However, we find that our students, our prospective students, investigate and investigate deeply. They will engage with us through email follow-up. We might spend some time on the phone with them. We have a series of virtual events that we're trying to clarify particular programs or to cite the difference from one program to the next, et cetera. So I think that prospective students are eager to learn. They go through the learning process, and then that whole kind of culmination manifests itself on these responses. This is why I'm looking. These are the reasons why. It's not always because I want to study under Professor XYZ or I want to be in this particular lab. It might be, you know, my commitment has been a lifelong process of learning, but also valuing those around me. And I'm finding that on your campus.
Well, that's great insight, Bruce. And of course, I know that Lehigh, like many other schools throughout the country, is in fact test optional. Bruce, can you share the percentage of students that apply and that are ultimately admitted that did not submit their test scores? And does this change at all based on intended major?
We adopted, just to give you some quick background, obviously COVID made the decision for us to adopt a test optional philosophy. But since then, I will say as a professional, it has become refreshing to not have to necessarily... In some of the cases where we're making decisions on the margins, we might have to look in the past, we might have looked at testing more so as a complement to the academic piece. And it could have been the difference between a student who was admitted or waitlisted or denied. But today, we will, for the foreseeable future, remain test optional. That is our stance. It is about a 50-50 split, almost evenly split between this, and this is strictly within the admitted student population, not the applicant pool. The applicant pool, just under half of the applicants to Lehigh last year submitted standardized testing. In the admit pool, it's about 50-50, which is nice. It's a good split. I prefer that it's 50-50 as opposed to 70% of the admits were from test submitters versus 30% non-test submitters. But it is, as I said earlier, it's been refreshing because you're not necessarily anchored to standardized testing, which has, of course, we've talked about this publicly in the media, et cetera. There are good and bad sides of standardized testing. There are inherent biases. There are institutions that use it for very specific purposes to place students in classes in the first year. So, you know, it is not the sum total of an individual. I never looked at SAT or ACT scores as, you know, the deciding factor. Also, if I can quickly mention, and I think this is where a little bit of our narrative on higher education gets a bit off the rails, is that if individuals are looking or making the presumption that the level of intellectual discourse on a college campus is tethered to an average SAT or ACT score, I think they're making a big mistake, because there are so many wonderful elements to institutions. You just have to look deeper, right? You've got to look below the bricks and mortar. You've got to interact and engage. But we will remain test optional for the foreseeable future on our campus.
Well, I appreciate that. And I love the word that you use, because it is in fact refreshing. And thank you for sharing that for the admitted students. And I'm emphasizing this again, for the admitted students, it was 50-50 in terms of students that had actually submitted scores and those that did not. Mm-hmm. I'm emphasizing it because there seems to be a feeling out there that the test optional movement is not real. So here at Lehigh, that's a great statistic. And by the way, it's pretty consistent amongst all the schools. I ask this question pretty regularly. Going to say something, Bruce?
Yes. May I also add, John, that I think the unintended consequence of adopting a test optional policy, and so many institutions did coming out of COVID or during the COVID period, is that the unintended consequence is that the students, that they themselves feel their test results are higher naturally. They could have an SAT composite in the high 14s or the mid 15s or the high 15s, or an ACT composite of 34 or 35, et cetera. I think there is a greater tendency for those students to submit naturally.
Right.
What's that? What that is doing, however, is it's taking the middle 50% band, the 25th to 75th percentile, and it is inflating it artificially so that to the general public, they'll see that middle 50% band that is on the higher end and assume that I shouldn't apply because that's the middle 50%. Well, not necessarily. Only less than half of our students submitted standardized testing. So really, you're immediately disqualifying half of the applicant pool. They just didn't submit standardized testing. So be aware.
Well, that's such a great point, and you're absolutely right. Everyone should hear that again. The mid 50% nowadays is skewed. It's higher because, as Bruce said, less than 50% of the students submitted their test score. So obviously students that are submitting are those students that are scoring higher, which is fantastic. And if you have a favorable score, certainly submit it if it's, you know, adding to your overall application. But if you see a school whose mid 50 is high, and it might be a little bit of a reach for you to reach those numbers, that's okay. Study for the test, take the SAT, take the ACT, take it again and again, and you make a decision. If you're within the range and it's going to help your overall application, fantastic, submit. If not, at Lehigh, again, admitted students, 50% submitted, 50% did not. So it's very important to just have clarity in terms of this part of the overall application. And so, Bruce, where do you see the test optional trend going in the next few years?
I think there's a small collection of institutions that will very likely return to requiring tests. They might roll out initially and say that we're test optional, but we do recommend. And I think that creates vagueness to students where they say, well, if you're test optional but recommend, does that mean that you are a de facto test required institution? And that's, you might get a straight answer, you might get a kind of a vague answer, but I think there are some institutions that will return. I think that MIT is one institution that did recently return to requiring SATs, but MIT does that for a very specific reason. That is a very institutional reason. They use those tests for placement, but they're also using them for evaluation. They're one institution that stands out that went back to requiring SAT or ACT scores. It's fine. It's their decision. But I think that higher education writ large will probably still adhere to the more schools adhering to test optional, more schools that are embracing it and seeing the value in it. I think that there's still a place for standardized testing. But as I said earlier, it's not the end all. It's not the sum total of an individual. There's so many different measures for success and, you know, the academic markers that we look for that are important to us.
Well, thank you. And what's important to the listeners to hear someone like yourself as the director at Lehigh to just give that insight. You know, we really appreciate it. And I was also curious, Bruce, when reviewing applications, obviously from various high schools, I know that you talked about the fact that you specifically work out of Manhattan, but obviously Lehigh gets applications throughout the entire country and beyond. So how do you take into account when one student's school offers close to, let's say, 30 advanced placement courses while someone else's only offers 5? How does the review process differ for these two types of students?
Sure. So I would begin by saying that this is an aspect where we have very intentional discussions in our selection committee. When we sit together as a staff and we are making final decisions after all the reviewing has been completed, we want context. We want to understand the nuances, the subtleties in the curriculum from one high school to another. We will not, and I would emphasize this, we will not compare a student from, for example, high school A against the neighboring high school B that might be several miles down the road or in the next town over, et cetera. So I think it's, again, about context. I've seen a number of high schools, public, independent, that have intentionally abandoned their advanced placement curriculum or their international baccalaureate curriculum to sort of level the playing field in their high school. I think, however, you know, if a student is willing to be a risk taker and they might attend one of those high schools that prides itself on its level of advanced placement. In some cases, it could be international baccalaureate. But they promote the idea that we are a rigorous high school. We offer a lot of advanced placement classes. If we see very little evidence of it, that's all we can go on. We can't make assumptions. We can't assume that it was a matter of, you know, the seventh and eighth grade and not getting on the right track, and they came into ninth grade and they, you know, couldn't eventually take the number of APs that they'd like to. Sometimes high school counselors might explain that, but we can't make that assumption. So truthfully, if there is a reasonable number of advanced placement courses on a transcript, given a school that would have a healthy menu of options for AP, and the student feels like this made sense to me, I gravitated towards areas of the curriculum that I felt that advanced placement will give me the challenge, I'm curious and I want to learn this material at a deeper level, then by all means, that's fine. Okay. But I also feel that, you know, for the students who might, for example, complete three or four APs in the junior year and then five APs in the senior year, I just want to make sure that the student is ready, because the worry that I have there is if you have a five AP schedule in the senior year, when you go off to college, especially if you're applying to very selective places, you know, don't leave. If you say there's no gas left in the tank, I left it all in my 12th grade. I really poured it on for the sake of impressing the college admissions offices. And I really, I'm exhausted mentally. Went through a lot in this past year. And oh, by the way, I'm at a competitive school, competitive college, if you will. And, you know, the bottom 80% of my class is gone. Everybody around me was top 10, top 5, valedictorian, et cetera. You're going to have to hit the ground running. So I do worry a little bit about the student that overextend themselves. Okay, so that's important. We won't penalize a student, though, who, you know, has an appropriate number within a 30 AP high school, for example, or a student who says, look, I only took two APs because our school only offers five. That's it. Right. Everything else is really tough. So, yeah, right. It's all about context.
Well, thank you for explaining that context. And can you explain what opportunities Lehigh offers students that may have had an IEP while in high school in terms, of course, of helping to ensure that they continue to be successful once they're on your campus?
Certainly. We have an Office of Disability Support Services on campus that basically it enhances the university's educational mission, our commitment to maintaining an inclusive and equitable community by providing equal access and reasonable accommodations to qualified students. So we don't, in the admissions process, if a student holds an IEP, we don't ask them to submit. They might come to campus and or they could visit campus and have that IEP and schedule an appointment to speak with our disability support services office to say, you know, what would this mean? Would I qualify for? We will test students internally as well if they don't have an IEP. But what we're trying to do is to provide the level of service. And in some cases, that could mean accommodations. In other cases, it could be tutorial support. So that we are providing them with the best opportunity for success in our classroom. No one at Lehigh is handed a grade. I think students work very hard for the grades that they earn, but at the same time, we want them to feel confident that I could have a particular disability or a learning difference that might affect a particular dimension of my curriculum. How can you accommodate? How can you work with me so that this really becomes an afterthought? I'm working through it, or I've worked through it in high school. I understand how to navigate, and I'm continuing on that in that positive direction. So lots of opportunities for students who themselves might have an IEP, or they might go undiagnosed until their junior or senior year of high school, and this might be an all of a sudden item on their plate.
Well, I appreciate the information regarding your Office of Accessibility. And Bruce, I always put the Office of Undergraduate Admission in the show notes. If there are any links that you want to share for the students and parents, just send them to me. And of course, we'll make them available in the show notes. Sure. And speaking of parents, I've also received quite a few inquiries actually from parents and students that are homeschooled.
Yes.
So Bruce, how does the application process differ for students who are homeschooled in terms of what they need to consider when applying, but also what the review process looks like from an admissions office?
Sure. I'll rewind a bit. That's a great question.
Sure.
We are seeing a number of students. We have seen over the last decade or so a number of students who themselves are opting for homeschool, and that typically involves the completion of some level of transcript equivalency. We have had some homeschool students that might say that I do have my certificate, my homeschool certificate, but I am also going to sit for a GED. Just to get the GED. I simply want to get it. And that's a conversation we've had in our household. So that could be part of the equation. When, John, we were a test optional institution, we would place a little bit more emphasis on standardized testing to balance the homeschool curriculum. But today, since more and more students are opting to be homeschool, the prescribed curriculum, there's better guidance, better guidelines, better trained parents who themselves are educating their children. And so I think they are just as qualified as their counterparts at the nearby high school. They are just as qualified. I think they're just as ready to step into the classrooms and perform equal with their peers. So I would never, ever disparage the notion of homeschool, but we're seeing more of it. What is interesting, though, John, is that I mentioned earlier that we divide the U.S. and the world up regionally, person to person, okay? When it comes to homeschool students, it's where they live is their regional officer. So you could live in Silver Spring, Maryland, and your application is reviewed by the Maryland admissions representative, you know, whereas you could have a boarding school in Massachusetts, but the student's home address is in California. Well, the student in that case is tied to a high school, a specific high school, but homeschool, right. It's where you live. Yeah.
Well, we appreciate that insight. And it sounds then in terms of the overall review process, there's really not much difference at all between a student that's homeschooled and someone who's in a traditional, if you will, high school. Correct, Bruce?
That's correct. Yes.
Great. Thank you so much, Bruce. This has been an awesome conversation. Great. And we're coming towards the end of it. But before I ask that last question, Bruce, is there a question I didn't ask or a topic that I didn't bring up that you wish to share with us now?
I think all of the topics that we discussed are applicable to this process. I think that they covered everything that is necessary. The one piece that I would emphasize to students, however, is there are things that are within your control, and there are things that are outside of your control. The things that are within your control are twofold initially. First, it is conducting the meaningful, thoughtful, deliberate investigation, creating a list that you feel is manageable, a list of colleges and universities, exploring the options, regular decision, early action. You know, having knowledge and understanding those opportunities, those options as you apply. But that meaningful search is very important. The second piece that's clearly in the student's control is completion of the application itself. You are clearly, as a student, you are clearly in control of the content, the information that goes into that application. That is all you, all day, every day. The application is not something that you simply sit down and say, I'm going to complete all of this in one day. It usually takes time. It takes effort. You might craft an essay and redraft it, and et cetera, et cetera. You might change your responses. You might have a change of heart academically, but you control that piece. The once you touch submit, that's where, unfortunately, it temporarily goes out of your control because the admissions offices are intaking. They're bringing in those applications. They're processing everything. They're adding all of your documents together, and it goes through the review process that we covered earlier. What's funny, though, is that once that process is done, and especially for regular decision applicants, once that decision is rendered, if you are admitted, you go back to being fully in control. The students are in control. So there is that temporary piece where it's out of your hands, but there's these bookends of investigation, application, and then decision where they are yours. So, yeah.
Well, that's great insight. Thanks again, Bruce. This has been awesome. And it does lead us to that last question, which is, what are your top three pieces of advice you would provide a student and their parents getting ready for the college admissions process?
Sure. I think that to the students, please take care of yourself. Please make sure that, you know, you are mindful of those around you, but also take care of yourself. I will say that we are seeing an increase on some of the personal statements where, you know, especially in a post-COVID world where mental health has been something that's articulated, and not to the extent that we are overly concerned in every case, but I think COVID really took its toll in some cases in lost learning, in other cases in just the quick shift in teaching pedagogies and ways that the normal classroom educational experience was delivered to students. So make sure you're taking care of yourself, and please enjoy, for those students out there that are seniors, enjoy being a senior. The year will go by quickly. The moment to sort of embrace your friendships, embrace your opportunities, celebrate your accomplishments, your achievements, etc., are so important, because in less than a year, you're going to be on a new college campus, new chapter in life, adulthood, new people, but you should take time to enjoy the senior year. And then lastly, I would say, and this is more of a household thing, so this I think applies to parents as well as students, but if in your assessment of your qualifications, your everything you're going to put into that application, if you feel that I've created a list of colleges where I know I'm going to be successful, I'm absolutely confident that I'm going to be successful, and I'm also equally confident that I'm going to land. This everything will work out. I'm going to land. You've won half the battle. And I feel like students go into this process sometimes overcome with anxiety, because it is an issue of where am I going to get into and single digit admit rates, and oh my gosh, how's my application going to resonate against all these wonderful kids, etc. There is a right college or university for everyone. You just have to find it. I know that's a big task, but you just have to find it.
Well, those are tremendous pieces of advice, Bruce. Obviously, Lehigh is so fortunate to have you, as were we on this episode. Well, we can't thank you enough. I'm so happy, as I know that this is going to help so many students and their parents as they navigate the process.
Thank you.
Hope to have you again, Bruce. You were awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks, John. Thanks all.
Terrific. And one last thing to say to everyone out there, good luck with your college search. Take care, everyone, and best wishes.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of The CAP, the College Admissions Process Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please don't forget to tell a friend and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and wherever you listen to your podcasts. I am your host, John Durante, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode of The CAP.
Hey, podcast friends, if you've been enjoying the College Admissions Process Podcast, I'm excited to share my new book, Straight from the Admissions Office, Insider Strategies for College Applications. It's packed with insights and tips from over 250 podcast episodes with admissions professionals designed to make the college process less overwhelming. Whether you're a student, parent, or college counselor, it's a valuable resource for navigating the admissions process. By grabbing a copy, you're also helping to support the podcast. The links are in the show notes. Thank you, and best wishes to all with the college admissions process.